Maybe I'll kick off with a question, something I find really fascinating and have found in your practice, is kind of several things. One is your relationship to territory. That's a word you used several times through your talk. But also this idea of territory in different cultures. It's really curious to see how you're referencing, and it's not overt, you're not making anything of it, but I'm kind of interested in that separation of being in other cultures and other places, and that sort of process, which you started off talking about through walking, but I guess it's a process of recognition, of noticing, and the difference, or is that for you heightened by being somewhere else, somewhere other?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the, I mean, in a way, when you are in a different culture and in a different country, of course, they're also human beings. They also have their dwelling, and many things are similar, but they're not quite the same. So you can say it's a little bit like a drug trip. Like overall, like life is still like how you think it is, but you don't understand anything. And somehow they have different things to how to organize life, how to kind of bricolage things together, you know. And it's kind of these kind of shifts in reality is kind of what made me realize how my preconceived ideas about how life is are just as much manufactured as are theirs. Like you know, it's very much also about the capitalist clock. You know, each time that you enter into a different civilization, at least at this point, and especially the further away the better, there's a different rhythm to life. There's a different rhythm to life, and if you have the time, and if you take the kind of the time, you will see that the rhythm that we all kind of grew up with and have it with our mother's milk, so to speak, which is kind of the capitalist rhythm, is by no means something that is God-given, but it's kind of a cultural construct. And I think that's for me very important.
And is it only through that distancing or repetition of being other in other places, does that help that recognition of that rhythm?
For me, yes.
By being in different rhythms. Because when you were talking earlier, I was really interested in if it was a generational or cultural perception of quite a refined, subtle space that you are occupying in many of these instances. And I was just wondering, how does anyone access that? Because I kind of felt for the way you were communicating that process of walking as a creative process of noticing recognition. And I was thinking, listening to that, that subtlety of understanding that, of it being exactly that process, because it's such a fine, delicate recognition, I think. If you get me. Because it's one thing to hear it, but to actually go and do it.
Right. Your question is it generational?
I think I'm just interested in the separation for how many of us in this room have experienced that.
Right.
And I'd love everyone too, I guess.
I mean, like what I did notice also when doing workshops at other universities and working with young students is what they are lacking, if I may say, is like I was growing up in the Cold War times, right? I'm kind of a child of the 70s and 80s. I'm coming from Berlin. There was a wall around my city. There was always two systems that were competing with each other. There was never, ever the belief, this is how it is, and it will be like that for eternity. Whereas for young student nowadays, who kind of, when I start talking about the war, you know, it's like my dad talking about the war. It's like, but what I'm trying to get at is, if you don't have the experience that life can also be organized in a completely different way, that we don't have to accept the things that are just have always been there, so to speak, then you kind of are lacking this kind of impetus to change because you think you don't even think that it's changeable because you accept it as a given. And I think that is one thing that if you go to, for instance, like a, as problematic as it may be, but if you go to Iran, which is a theocracy, where the whole life stops at certain times and everybody is going kind of down and you, look around and you go like, what's that? What's going on? And you start realizing that there is another instance or a completely other set of organizing life, then it kind of opens up your mind in a way that you think like, we don't have to live this way. We don't want to live this way. And translated to an artistic scale, it does kind of the same thing. But this is just when you were mentioning generations, that I feel that the young generations somehow don't question quite as much, but also because how should they? Mm. Yeah.
Okay, I think we should open it up a bit and see if we have any questions in the audience.
I was wondering about the patterns that you've chosen for the quilts, whether you've chosen the patterns because they have any particular significance.
For the quilts, I was wondering a little bit because it's kind of an important question. Do I use kind of classical quilt patterns or do I come up with my complete own creations? It's a question to answer. What does one thing mean? What does the other thing mean? In this case, I took the very first one was clearly inspired by an existing quilt, but kind of developed further. And the second one, I still used this parallelogram, this kind of shape, which is also kind of a classic quilt elementary shape to start and build something completely independent of what I'd seen before.
I just wonder when the viewer sits in your work, because the work is so
There's two things. We haven't really come to this kind of work, which is kind of my outside work. What I also do is, which is also part of my walking practice, is I also consider the outside space as a way to express myself artistically. And these kind of interventions are usually very minimal. They are being seen by very few people normally, and then they disappear, have no duration. I'm mentioning that because to me, it's not really that important to have a large audience or an informed audience for that matter. Like for me, it's more, let me just, I don't know if, for instance, this is a piece, it's called, as you can see, Genesis, and it's two times the same pile of rubbish, like until to the minute detail with little candles and da-da-da-da, organized so that when you walk by the first time and you just have it in the side and you walk by the second time, something clicks. Right, and you get this kind of déjà vu thing, and this is noticed by I don't know, two dozen people, and then also it's being cleaned up by the garbage people. But for me, these people who then kind of start, okay, this was strange, or what does that mean? If you have two times, what does that mean about the manipulation of reality? What does that mean about the notion of the new as something that reproduces itself, etc., etc. For me, these kind of works, they don't have an artistic audience. They don't really have an audience in that sense. They have a few people whose perception I might like kind of change or kind of I kind of rattle at the grid of preconceived ways of seeing the world, so to speak. And for me, that's kind of all I hope to achieve. And then I think indoor or outdoor, it's the same thing for me. And it's not really, I'm not really addressing to an art kind of informed crowd. And I actually prefer not to. Yeah.
We got Norman back there.
Thank you very much. The one moving blanket, I think it was in South America somewhere.
The what? The?
The moving blanket?
The moving blanket comes from all kinds of places.
I realize that, but one is sure.
Yeah, that was from Sao Paulo, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I first saw it, I thought it looks like a map. It looks like it's made up from atlases. Why I made that connection, I don't know. But listening to you speaking and going through that journey with you a little, I thought, yeah, this is a kind of a different kind of map, a different way of looking at the world. And actually, for me, listening to your lecture opened up a kind of liberation and a way of thinking within an art world that is very, I'm very grateful for. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think I wanted to challenge your history of walking.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very particular history, and if I were to write my history of walking, it would be another one.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
The history of the flaneur and its exclusion, the gender politics of walking.
Yeah.
The political aspects of walking,
yeah.
Of freedom to walk, and movement.
Yeah.
But as your talk developed and I warmed to it and felt my prickling risking because of the charm of delivery and the charm of the projects, two of which I'm so jealous of now I could kill myself actually, is the tin cans. God, I hate you for that.
Okay.
It felt that the framing of the walking was no more than a frame to introduce the lecture, and in fact what underpins it is something that has very little to do with walking, but perhaps is something closer to the mutability of the series of the lecture. So that was the first one. And the second is that we know historically that this is not where this work of art is happening in the street. We know that it's happening in the later documentation, in the catalogue, in the retrospective.
Mm.
For you not, for certainly all of those other practices that engage with some kind of mutable or walking practice or the finding of material, whether it's Douglas Hubler or Richard Long, there is eventually a site that is a conventional art space. So I'd just like to throw down that little corner to you as well.
To the first part, I'm aware of that. That this is my relation to walking, and it's not the history of walking. For that, I can all advise you to read Rebecca Solnit's Wanderlust, which is, it also has quite a few gaps, but it is quite a comprehensive history of walking, also in this the sense that you were missing here, I think. When it comes to the second, some people like make an outdoor or performance and record it, and then the recording is the thing, or the documentation is the thing that is visible, and it's I don't know if one has to make an argument out of it. For me, like, I was always asked to, okay, then you have this piece, and then I can make a photograph out of it, and then I frame it and I show it in a gallery. I've always refused to do that because the act is actually what is important, and then if you frame it, then you kind of give it the aura of a work, which that is not. It is a documentation, and as a documentation, I wonder what's the best format for me to document work and show it. And for me, actually, when it comes to work like that, I would rather have a cup of tea and go through a book, and I don't resist in kind of having kind of these kind of projects be documented in a book. But I would say this is a documentation and it's not the art. And it's not the white cube that counts, and it's not even the documentation that counts. For me, it's still the thing, the actual act outside. And the documentation is fine, but I wouldn't call the documentation the art. Like, for me, that difference is actually kind of important. And I have documented many of these works in a book that I actually wanted to talk about as well, which is a book on the meander. And the meander, I've done a show in Paris, which was called, how do you call it in English? Patterns Without Value. There is kind of a something that you print on a package that has kind of industrial samples in order to be delivered without freight. Pattern Without Value. Anyhow, I got money to do a catalog. I said I don't want to do a catalog, but I would like to do an artist book. And then I made an artist book that kind of inverted the very principle of, because many of my works are extracting kind of underlying patterns out of everyday life routines. And in this case, I wanted to go the other route and say, like, I'm going to use a formal pattern, a very classic one, the meander, and take this as the point of departure to enter into life and to see where I find that and where it echoes, and where it echoes in literature, in music, in my own work, etc., etc. So out of that came a book. Can I make advertisements for this book now and hold it up? And do we have?
Yeah, no. Do it.
Just kidding.
It's a book, and I can leave one here if you want to look through it.
Absolutely.
And it has some of the works that I was showing here. This is the book, and it is about the research on this very pattern, which comes, as we probably all know, from the river of the same name, of the meander. So already you have like the abstract pattern, and you have a real thing, which is an expression of physical properties of waters, of running waters, which all start meandering sooner or later if they go down. And then you go into the history of the pattern, into the cultures that use it today, its meaning, and kind of all framed by a travelogue, because it is about meandering. It is about me meandering in my mind, and it is about me meandering out there, all kinds of places. That's my M project. Right.
Right.
That is enough.
I'm there in the back.
I really appreciated the quality of your observation and allowing that freedom. It's almost like stopping, but you weren't stopping, you were going. I wanted to ask about your observation of your body moving through space, your skin, your feet, your clothes, and the changes that happen, whether that comes into it at all, into your observations.
Yeah, it does. I think the, I mean, there is, like, I think this kind of space blanket flag piece is very much relating to also the body. There's a picture series that I took in South America, is another thing about territory and frontiers, and it's kind of, so they have their huts, and they have barbed wire to kind of protect their private space, so to speak. But on that barbed wire, when they've done the laundry, they hang their underwear on the barbed wire, which I think is a very intimate gesture somehow, you know? And again, it's kind of that's also some kind of a frontier to shield me from the nakedness and being exposedness. And there you have kind of this barbed wire frontier, which is kind of neutralized by by their underwear and all that is completely exposed, and they kind of canceling each other out. So like these are things that I observe when it comes to my own physical act of walking, yes, it is also a very sensual thing in many respects, because as I kind of said, it is very much about picking up the smell of the petroleum if you're walking along the highways. It's about the noises, the sounds, the, like on my way here from Manchester Airport to here, the train, all the different smells. There were so many things actually that I already like took, and that kind of started creating another web of associations. So yes, it's very much there, and I cannot really translate it, most of it. It's just there. Yeah.
More questions? I'm going to ask you another question. The one about the flow, I've forgotten the name of the person in Korea that you commissioned to read the gallery.
Right.
Was doomed after 2 years.
The space was, yeah.
Yes. You said you wanted him, it was a him, not a her.
Yeah, it was a him.
To curate the show.
Yeah.
But there was some resistance.
Yeah.
Can you say something more about that desire to have him curate the show?
Well, it's kind of, I think my art, as is kind of with the cans, or it's very often trying to make visible underlying currents of which we are not aware, but which kind of form the way we think or we act or we kind of do our lives, and so feng shui is such a science that we might not be aware about. And I don't know if anybody here is kind of aware about it or living or kind of knows about it. But I was just thinking, if there is truth, and I don't know, I'm not a feng shui specialist myself, but if there is such a thing that there, and I can very well believe there is, that in any given space you have. How do you say? Like, I don't try to sound like a hippie here, but you have kind of energies. You feel good when you are in that position and not in that corner, or you feel kind of somehow unprotected when your back faces the door, or like certain things. And also, like for my workshops, very often I give like in a group, I give a coin to a person and say, take this coin and show me where's the center of the room, the heart of the room. I don't say the center, I say, where's the heart of the room? And it's quite amazing, but usually, because rooms nowadays are not really like a square or rectangle anymore, there's kind of more things happening in them. And so it's never the center of the room, but the place that is kind of chosen is surprisingly often very similar, although they don't know where the last one was. So so for me it was kind of trying to find out if there is this kind of thousands of years old science, and you have this kind of authority, the specialist, how would a show, how would an exhibition with artworks look like if he was just considering the energies? And yeah, it hasn't happened.
Why is there so much resistance to it?
You're not a curator, are you?
I've curated quite a lot, actually.
Okay, well, in this case, I think the notion was, I'm the curator. If I can't even decide, you know, like the people have already been chosen, if I can't even decide what goes with what the hell, you know? I think it was about questioning authority. And then
hierarchical.
It was a hierarchical question. And then also another thing for artists, there's also a lot of bickering who gets to have what space. So it's a heavily charged thing. You really have to have everyone agree in order to make that happen, because otherwise you have your diva who wants this, like also male diva, you know.
You didn't the curator have a responsibility to you to realize your work as a curator who invited the show, speaking from aspect of the curator, that had I invited you to be in that show, I would have had to follow your work through.
Right. Well, I guess they thought their work was done with the expert opinion there. You know, kind of as a compromise. I mean, also sometimes you suggest a work to a curator and they just say no, right? happens all the time.
Okay, any more questions?
It's just a last question. The pieces were so beautifully concise and so concentrated of themselves. So I'm interested in the relationship between that, those, I know they were fine art, which they're part of the process, but I'm interested in you talking a little more about the act of walking, about it being passive or active. So in some senses we walk and we're working, if you like.
Yeah.
You're looking to work and you're looking at relationships or you're looking to see what might occur.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you're not planning a walk, you're allowing the environment to lead you here and lead you there. And on one hand, you have to be non-directed to be receptive. And on the other hand, you have to be active to be aware of what you see.
Yeah. It's a very kind of complicated issue, I think, in many respects. Yes, like I think for me that sense of meandering is kind of being in a flow, and I don't want to interrupt that flow. Somehow you really are entering a different mindset. Now, I think when it comes to kind of, and then picking up the camera, taking a picture, or this scene is like nothing will ever be the same, and you film it. The moment that you are having this awareness and you start getting out your camera and you film, you're no longer in the flow. So I think we all make this experience. You have to choose. Either you're just going to be, you know, immersed in the moment and just enjoying it and be it, be in it, or you have to step out of the frame and be the artist and kind of have this distance, which is not the same thing. So it is kind of a fluctuation between going inside and going outside. You can't have both simultaneously. I think me, I can't.
Okay, I think we've reached a natural conclusion.
So
thank you for coming, and thank you for the
talk. Thank you for inviting me.